Thanks for tuning in to the Boiler Express podcast. Join us each week as we dive into all things Purdue sports. You'll hear in-depth analysis of our previous and upcoming games, as well as interviews with players and people involved in the Purdue sports fandom. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and YouTube for our live stream shows as well.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Boiler Express podcast. We've got the whole crew here tonight, which I feel like is the first time in a long time. Good to see everybody. And it was a, you know, we're 1-5 in football now, but it was a good weekend. It was probably the most exciting weekend we've had of Purdue football this year. Even though we're coming off a loss against a ranked opponent, really tough loss there at the end, lost in overtime, 49-50. But we'll talk about it later, but me personally, just quickly, you got to love Walter's chutzpah to want to go for two there at the end to secure the win. But we'll talk a little bit about basketball as well. We've got the basketball season coming up. We have seen a little bit of preseason action between from Zach Edey and Jaden Ivey themselves. So, how's everybody doing tonight?
I'm doing great. I'm trying to win our fantasy or our dynasty game.
Did you just combine fantasy and dynasty?
I did fantasy.
Dynasty. I like it. I like it.
I haven't
got
less sleep.
When Chris runs a program, it's not a dynasty. It's a fantasy.
It's a failure is what I mean.
Hey, the Miami Hurricanes, we're doing all right.
Yeah.
Took the job and they had really good recruits.
Cheater.
That's not cheating. That's just good luck.
That's OSU.
I forgot to check. I wanted to check at the end of the season to see if Texas even got any recruits at all.
No, probably not, because I didn't do any recruiting. But the thing, one of the big reasons I left Texas was everything positive that could have happened to Texas, they fired that stupid cannon off. And I was getting tired of it. Like the kickoff, field goals, extra points, touchdowns, somebody trips and falls, boom, boom. And I was getting real tired.
You know, I'm old and I don't do receipts as well as y'all do. But I believe I saw something about 1 hour ago at Dylan Kuhn _ all capitals.
Hey, that's different.
Fire the cannon. Let's go. #CBJ. Sorry. So that's weird. It's weird.
Different. Listen. That's hockey. There's a lot less scoring. They don't fire it off enough as often. And it's cool.
Also true.
I will say I went to one professional hockey game. It was a playoff game between the Predators and the Jets. And I was very impressed. Like, I think Purdue does a great job with Mackey. Obviously, we pack Mackey out. We lock out the opposing fan base. We do really well, but it's a basketball game, right? It's back and forth. There's a lot of noise, whatever. The Predators, and I think a lot of hockey arenas are like this. When they host a game, especially a playoff game, there's like 5 away fans there and their family. Yeah. So when the opposing team scores, you can literally hear the dude across the arena on the opposite level cough. Like, I was like, this is kind of cool. Like, this is cool. And then obviously, the Nashville, when the Predators score, you can't hear yourself think.
The Nashville fighting Chris Hansen's?
Jeez.
speaking of hockey, while we're talking hockey, watching the Jackets game right now. I don't know if anybody watched probably not. I was probably the only one. They had a pregame thing for Johnny Gaudreau. It's enough to make a grown man cry. I mean, Johnny G, man, and his brother.
I don't doubt it.
Oh, it was a doozy. But and his wife's there, and his dad, Guy, has been at practice. And they've had him be like a coach, which he is. He's a hockey coach. But like they've had him be like a guest coach for the Blue Jackets. And I don't know, man. I love hockey. I come from a hockey background. So I love that stuff. But, that was a touch. It was enough to make a grown man cry, which it did.
Yeah. Those tributes and stuff are always tough, especially in a circumstance where he'd only been in the league like 5 to 7 years?
Seven or eight, probably.
Okay.
He's 31, 32, 31.
I want to address Cody's comment here. It says, Purdue really shocked me this past weekend that Michaela told me that I'm not allowed to watch the games anymore because they do good things when I'm not watching. And Cody, I want to just say that you're not alone. Because I texted the guys, they were blowing up the group chat, and it was right whenever they had recovered the punt or the kickoff towards the end of the game, and were able to go down there and score. And I was like, guys, I haven't watched any of the second half. Should I turn it on? And it was like, no. So then, of course, I watched overtime.
we were very adamant about turning it off.
So everyone blamed Damon.
What was actually real crazy is, I think I saw three onside kicks recovered in college football that day.
It was wild.
There are a lot of onside kicks this weekend.
Dude, who was it?
They're just across
Oregon.
The Oregon, where he doinks it off the dude's face mask.
South Carolina got one against Bama and almost won that game.
That one guy tweets, like, we've all thought about just kicking the ball straight at a defender, and Oregon actually did it.
It made me think of Waterboy. Waterboy, like, when the guy's kicking off, and he's like, who's my guy? Who's my guy?
And then Purdue did sort of kind of the Pat McAfee onside where he kicked it straight forward, but when it was against the Texans, they were much farther back.
Yeah.
But that onside kick by Purdue was
So question, guys, and for anyone who didn't watch the game or doesn't know what happened in the game, sorry if I'm spoiling it for you. Was that a fumble by Luke Altman?
Yes.
A bazillion percent.
Yes.
100%.
I called it when it, like, right after the play, I'm like, he lost it. Like, he did not have control of the ball. And in football, the referees, when they review, they're so crazy and harsh about the receiver or the player and their control of the football while they're going down. That's like, I feel like that's been a big deal across all levels of football. And then they're like, he had his pinky and it was on his thigh.
Yeah. Shout out to Boiler Dowd. I think he said after the game, he said, if you're a Purdue fan and you're counting on the Big Ten refs to make a call in your favor late in the game with the game on the line, do not get your hopes up.
Right. Start to 20.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say was that. I was going to say that, like, and this is going to sound super homer, but I feel like anytime I'm watching a review for any other game, it's like, oh, it's got to be definitive. There's got to be completely clear evidence to back this up here. It can't be 50-50. And then every time it's like a Purdue calls up in the air and they're reviewing it, it's always like, well, it could go either way. And then it gets overturned. It's like,
I feel like anymore in games, they will do like the rules analyst, like Mike Herrera or whatever, will be like, oh, yeah, that's definitely going to be a fumble. He lost control here, blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, ruling on field stands, not a fumble. And everybody's like, what the hell? Like, yeah. I've heard that more times than not, I feel like.
Yeah.
So, changed my mind. That play, although it would have sealed the game for us, did not cost us the game. That's my stance.
I mean, you could argue that the first half cost us the game, if, like,
agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could argue the fact that we just couldn't get a stop there down the stretch. Yeah. You know,
so I will say that I don't think, how do I put it? I think it cost us the game for the simple fact that if you get a fumble there and you've got momentum and you're going, because this was the drive they were going to kick the field goal to tie, right?
Yeah, it was like we would have kneeled the ball out. It would have been game.
Yeah, there was. I think there was
like 40
seconds.
It was a call that would have won us the game, but it didn't necessarily win them the game. It just kept them alive.
Yeah, it kept them in the game.
And I think that was kind of a kick in the nuts, for lack of a better way to put it. I think that it just was a morale killer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, so all right. Yeah, let's talk about some of the positives. What about Ryan Brown? What'd you guys think?
Super.
Fire.
What did Brown do for you, man?
He rated a 90 in PFF?
90.9 in the country? Yeah, 90.9 in PFF. So for reference, a 90 in PFF is like a Pro Bowler in the NFL. Like if you get a 90 in the NFL, that's like a Pro Bowl level player. So I mean, that was his grade for the week. So to rattle off some numbers here, 297 yards, which is really good considering we haven't been able to throw the ball for a while,
and against a team that gives up 14 points a game.
76% adjusted completion percentage, which is stellar. But I mean, what's interesting is that, you know, he was only under pressure 13 times. How many dropbacks total? 32. So 13, 32.
The boys.
So really, really good showing by the offensive line. But I mean, I think that, and I'm not trying to take away any credit from Ryan Brown, but I think, you know, part of what we saw was just, we saw a really balanced offense. Mm-hmm. We saw an offense who was able to move the ball well on the ground early in the game. Mockaby was running the ball well. Read options were going. And I think that we just started opening things up in the passing game, which just allowed for some easier throws. But I feel like he was a little bit more willing than what we've seen from Hudson Card to just let his receivers make plays. I feel like he was happier to throw. He was happy to make some dangerous throws. I mean, to put it candidly, and he allowed the receivers to step up and make plays. And to be honest, I'm a little bit I have a little bit more faith in the receiving corps now after seeing that.
That, you know, and I think the big thing, in my opinion, and we haven't brought this up yet, but was Walters calling the offense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that because you saw a definite change on how the
Vinny's like, it was a fumble.
Vinny says it was a fumble. Yeah,
case my favorite Italian, Vinny Sutherland.
I don't need another opinion now. And
to that point, too, Chris, like it literally, he called like 70% run plays in the first half. So yeah. I think that given that it's only his second game action, and he's a redshirt freshman because of that, I think he was nervous to like open the playbook a whole lot in the first half. And so we did call 70% run plays. And then some of the pass plays that didn't work out was like that screen pass y'all were talking to, like the bubble screen or the quick pass to
the first drive.
Edwin in the flat, and he couldn't break the tackle to get the first down.
Yeah.
But I think in the second half, once we were down that point, we had to throw the ball, right? And it turned out, hey, Brown's pretty comfortable throwing the rock. So
that kid's got moxie, man. Like,
it was his decisiveness that really got me. I mean, it's like, it's almost instinctual. Like he didn't overcomplicate anything. I mean, I don't know how many times I said it. He sees an open receiver and he throws the ball.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking on Hudson Card at all, but sometimes, you know, in the past he's had a bit of a tendency to kind of overthink some things. And especially that, like that last touchdown pass to Maccabee, it wasn't even a three-step drop. It was, I'm in the middle of my drop. Oh, heck, Maccabee's open for a split second. Boom. I mean, it was just so fluid. And, you know, when there was nothing there, he grabbed the ball and he ran. And he didn't think about it. And he didn't try to be Patrick Mahomes. He didn't do the whole, you know, oh, I'm going to pretend like I'm going to run and then, you know, stop. And he just took the ball and ran. And he got 5, 6, 7, 15 yards even. So,
the
decisiveness I loved. Go ahead, Dylan.
During the run, the final four run, I may or may have not made a tweet that said nobody in either basketball or football should wear 15 again for Breeze and Edie. And Brown and Will Helt got a hold of that. And
apparently told you good, shut your mouth.
They were good sports. And I just want to say, fellas, my bad. You've proven me wrong. Not that I was doubting them.
And Will Helt got a stupid score in the game too, so it was a good game for the 15. Yeah.
So like I wasn't doubting them. They're both ballers, but I was doubting them wearing the number 15. Hey, it's on me, boys.
I think both of them are like over 6'4". So you know,
good luck. Yeah, I'd be in trouble. Yeah, for sure.
I will say that I was super refreshed after this game because like it wasn't like Ryan Brown came out and played against an Indiana State or a level team like that. He did it against a defense that holds teams to 14 points a game. I think they're top 25 in allowed passing yards and rushing yards, I think.
And it's a game.
You're right, Vinny.
It's a game they wanted, and their starters were still in. They didn't just pull the foot off the gas. You know, there is a history there. We played for a rivalry trophy. So it wasn't like they packed in the bus and just let us back into it. Like they were trying to stop us,
right?
And we were just tearing them up in the second half.
Yeah.
And regardless, Vinny,
they got to retire the number 14.
Regardless of what anyone tells me, they rushed the field.
That is wild.
Yeah. That is Illinois, wild. Illinois fans like on Twitter saying they didn't
actually. Their football game, so.
Dude, that's still crazy. You've got like a number 23 team in the country, and you've got 17 people.
We packed the house for this. For 1-5, let alone, I mean, Oregon's going to be packed. I think
I would expect Oregon to be a rocking atmosphere, even given. And that just shows the energy that's still in this program is like ridiculous. Like,
that's what here I'm going to have a little uniform talk brought to you by Boiler Uniforms. The new uniforms they released.
What?
Today.
We have new uniforms this week? What?
Yeah. They were never leaked.
This is the first time hearing of this.
They were never leaked. Never. I don't believe it. They look 10 times better than they do in the video game.
Chris is looking at his video game playing with the new
helmets. delicious helmets. Oh,
well, the team store was already selling the merchandise like 2 days ago.
Oh, good. Good. Glad everyone's on the same page.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was brought to you by Boiler Uniforms. What?
I don't like them.
You don't like anything.
Go to bed.
Yeah, so here's a question: when do we see some trick plays? I mean, we saw the little flea flicker flip yeah. back to the quarterback pass to Claire, which I definitely thought could have been a touchdown there, but neither here nor there.
Ben Johnson, the better Johnson brother.
Wow. Vinny says we're not the Miami Hurricanes.
Wow,
that's a shot at Vinny, you and your dynasty.
Vinny, how were you? How did you survive? I mean, obviously you survived. How'd you do with the hurricane? How's things down there?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, let us know, Vinny.
Vinny.
Let's talk about defense. Obviously, you want to feel like you're in a situation where you score, 49 points and you win the game, but that unfortunately wasn't the case. You know, and I think this is at least the second to game in a row to fairly say the defense has struggled. I don't know. What do you guys think? What's your take on the defensive performance? Obviously, they had the scoop fumble for the touchdown, which was huge. But you know, outside of that, it was just a lot of a lot of big shots by the Illinois offense and the inability to stop them. But as far as specific players, anything? What did you guys think?
I think Jenkins looked really good. I think this was another game. It seemed like he has settled into that position a little bit. I still think there's goods and bads. I feel like the defensive line still is still decent. But it's just the secondary right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what secondary. Go ahead, Damon.
No, you're good. I was just gonna say that's the frustrating thing is because we know that there's some like really good players on this defense. You know, you got Will Hell, you got Kydren Jenkins, you got Dylan Thieneman, you've got Kendrick Breedlove, who has shown some strides, lately. And it's just a bummer to not see it translate as like this cohesive all around effect on the field. Like I feel like these guys have some good, like really solid plays throughout the game, but it's not like all meshing together, and I don't know what it's going to take to make it all mesh together. I don't know if it's a scheme, if we're asking guys to do things they're not comfortable with. I don't know what it is, but it's a bummer because it was such a fun game to watch, but you wanted this was like, you know, all year long or for most of the season, it's been like, oh, we need the offense to help pay back the defense when they're having these big stands. And it's like then today or last week it was or this past weekend, it was, you know, the defense couldn't pay back the offense when they were putting it in the end zone. So just frustrating. But you're just hoping that, you know, with the guys they have out there that they figure it out. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Glad to hear you're in the clear, Vinny. I know you could outrun a hurricane, but, you know.
This is what I was talking about. Maybe a couple weeks ago, when you have a situation where your offense is clicking, but your defense is struggling, it's exciting football, right? Yeah. It's like, okay, like we feel better about the team now, even though it was an overtime loss and it will give up 50 points, which I think is a little misleading because obviously there's the overtime points with the touchdown. Right. They also kind of got spotted, you know, a short field and a touchdown on that weird kick that got caught by the wind and they get the ball back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's more exciting when your offense is playing lights out and your defense is struggling than like when your defense is struggling and you're just giving up points and then your offense goes three and out and then you give up more points and then your offense goes three and out. You know, this is at least giving us something to hope for and go, you know, Hudson Card's a very talented quarterback. I think he's gotten, you know, a little bit of a rough situation, you know, obviously going into last year with the offensive line, and sometimes things just don't click, regardless of how talented you are. And when you're in Division One, Brown was a three-star recruit, but three-star recruit is the difference between being like a top 50 quarterback in the nation or top 10 quarterback in the nation, right? Like you're still a supremely talented athlete. And sometimes it takes the right guy in the right situation to click. Like Aiden O'Connell was a walk-on, right? And Jack Plummer was the guy that was the more highly touted recruit, an actual scholarship athlete out of high school, but Aiden O'Connell was the one that came in and just clicked.
Right.
So
I think and to kind of talk about Cody's comment down there, I think then from kind of what I was understanding or somebody might have mentioned, maybe it was on Coach's show or maybe it was press conference Monday since it is Tuesday today. I think that the OC was just kind of an interim guy, right? Until Walters felt comfortable with the verbiage and the commentary and stuff. Yeah. Am I understanding that correctly?
That was my take. It was just an intermediary step, and that like Simmons will still be employed and still kind of serve as an advisor, and he'll still be up in the box communicating what he's seeing. But I think the plan was for Walters to call the offense. He just had to learn the offense. And kudos to him. I mean, he talked about staying up until 2:30 in the morning, learning all the terminology and everything. And he said that, you know, he would not have been able to call the plays fast enough. And it wasn't that he didn't know the plays necessarily, but it's that he wouldn't have been able to stay with the necessary speed that you need in that scenario. But I mean, the offense looks different. It does. There's a lot more I formation, which I know Conrad will be happy about.
Bring back the fullback.
Yeah.
No.
I believe, didn't he ask on the coach's show last year when we were going to see the I formation? So
I think so. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, I think we might have just found a good combination now. This might have been, you know, sometimes it doesn't click right away, and especially Walter's a first-time head coach. You've got to learn, okay, now I go from a coaching role to more of like a delegating, fundraising, figurehead kind of a role. But this might be the good fit, right? Like, he can delegate probably better defensively, right, because he's a defensive-minded defensive coach. He can kind of try to pick the right guy and delegate what he wants the defense to look like. But offensively, you know, that's what – you know, obviously that's what wins you games, right? Defense can win you championships, but offense, you got to score the points to win the game, no matter how good your defense is. So for him to actually like be able to be hands-on and call the plays on offense now, this might be that fit that clicks going forward and goes, okay, now we can get momentum. We can kind of stop the bleeding with some of the roster stuff, which I think a lot of people are freaking about the roster stuff because of the Walters rumors or what job security, et cetera, et cetera. I think it has more to do with Graham Harrell being let go as the offensive coordinator and him being the one that maybe got some of these commits and these being his guys.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
That, and I think honestly too, I mean, you know, Walters is kind of like you said, you know, he's drinking from a fire hose in that first year that he's there. Cause like he gets hired in December, right? And then
late December.
And he's immediately going into spring ball and
living rooms. No,
it wasn't until January.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because it was after the bowl game, and the bowl game was on December 31st.
Oh, so, that's right. Okay. So, yeah, but cool. I knew it was a disaster, right?
It was like, late.
But like the fact that, you know, he's immediately going to try and keep all the other recruits together, and he's trying to figure out his part.
I just want to call out Devin Mockaby in that game. I had to look 9.3 yards per carry in that game.
Jeez.
That's absolutely insane. Crazy.
Pretty good.
4 yards after contact.
Pretty good.
4 yards after contact per carry.
That's insane.
Hey, guess what? Devin Mockaby, good at football.
Good at football.
Very good at football. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I think when your running back's getting 9 yards per carry.
And I, Damon, you were going to say something. Sorry, my bad.
Oh, no, you're good. I was just going to say, like, just thinking about, like, Brown now being officially being the starter for this Friday game against Oregon. It's kind of exciting to see what he can do with, I mean, now he's going to be at home. He's going to be in front of a crowd that's cheering him on, because I'm sure Oregon travels well, but I don't know how well, you know, and if they think that if they're going to play at 1-5 Purdue, don't know how many, unless they're like diehard fans that keep up and know that we have our history of being like the spoiler makers or whatever. How many fans are really going to travel out to West Lafayette
and it's also a Friday.
Yeah, that. And I think it was Boiler Dad or maybe Boiled Sports. Somebody tweeted something about how Purdue fans are not hard to please. It's you just got to give us something to get behind. And like, whether that's like just some grit, something. And I mean, and I think that shows, because the fan response and turnaround from, you know, just a week ago to after Saturday is a huge change. Because I was worried that if we were going to get blown out of Illinois, I was like, oh my god, like I didn't even want to think about Ross.
Oh, yeah.
On Friday.
That reminds me, Tom Dinehart, we didn't get blown out, thank you. Just thought I'd bring that up.
You know, last week I think it was fair to say, if Twitter was any sort of, and Facebook and every other form of social media was any reflection of how the fans were feeling as a whole, I think it was safe to say Walter's in the hot seat, right? After after Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Does this does this game cool off his seat a little bit more?
Vinny! A little
bit. Yeah. I mean, and that's like the nature of football, kind of, right? Like that's it's week to week. It's what have you done for me lately? You know, I think Deion said it when he left Jackson State. He was like, coaches either get fired or promoted, right? Like, so it's just the nature of the beast sometimes. But, yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, it's a week-to-week thing, you know, in all of football. You see, even the NFL is you're having unprecedented first-year coaches getting fired sometimes before they make it through their first season. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, you know, it can be pretty cutthroat sometimes. But, yeah, I think this is definitely – it's shown us something different is the biggest thing. You know, and to me, it still comes down to what does the roster look like at the end of the year, not necessarily what does our record look like. You know, I was thinking, you know, even the Illinois game when I saw it kind of, you know, maybe possibly not going our way after that comeback, it was still kind of like I wasn't upset that we lost the game. It was more like, okay, so does this give us enough hope to, like, get the roster continue to be built up? What does the rest of the season look like? Is this the recipe, that kind of thing?
Do you just want to point out something, guys? I don't know if you've thought about this, or I haven't heard anything about this. I just thought about it or just put it together in my head. The last time that Purdue played a ranked team that was number two in the country and beat them at home was on October 18th. I'm just saying.
Oh,
I was going to sit here and say some things too. Like,
and it's a hammer down cancer game this week, right?
If you remember the 49-20 game, Frank, which we've talked about this aspect of it, we had some suspect cornerbacks as far as their performance goes, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they did.
The guys that Ohio State thought, hey, we can attack these guys because they've been a little suspect, and then they made plays. You know, we have some guys in that situation, right? Somebody like Nylon Green that's still trying to get, you know, his feet underneath him. He's displayed that he has some of the talent. You know, he makes some good plays, but then there's some plays where he doesn't get his head turned around. So this could be a game.
Nobody
where
is, though.
They see, turn yeah, your head they, around. They could see this as a game where, hey, Illinois
turn your head around. Work.
Let's attack him. And if Nylon Green has a game, you know, that makes a recipe. Yeah. And then when we beat Ohio State, we had a couple of good running backs, right? Well, what do we have this year? Good running backs.
The Blue Jackets are empty net. That's so I'm watching the Jackets game right now. So.
We had the Thunder and Lightning. And yeah,
what a great podcaster I am.
Russ, it was obvious in Ohio State's game plan that they sought out that one particular cornerback. And I'm so happy that I got
Antonio
to tell
Blackman,
him.
Right? I think it was, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I wasn't gonna mention his name, but he didn't have a great season.
You can mention him.
He didn't have a great season. Man. But like, I'm so happy that I got to tell him that he was the MVP of that game. I'm sure he probably
still thinks about that.
Yeah, I'm sure. But I when I ran on the field, I was like, you're the MVP, man. Because like they went to him so many times in the end zone, and he showed up every single time.
Frank says he said that, but he was actually like he was crying.
Russ, I have it on video.
When he
I have
tried
it on video,
it just you know,
I had my phone in my hand as I stormed the field, so. So I can prove it to you, and then I said it to another player too. So I told two players.
Wow,
you lying prick!
Wow, the
other was Isaac Zico. Man, he also
Zico did really have.
Yeah, he had that insane Zico. catch in that game.
Dan says that Russ needs a hat sponsor, and that's true. We need someone to cover up that bald dome of his.
So we got a question here from Cody.
Let's see your head there, Dylan. Take the hat off. Let's see the top.
I just got a haircut, son. Look at that. That's something. Okay.
Oh yeah.
So Cody wants to know if you roll the dice, against the Ducks on Friday, or do you keep doing what you did against
you
Illinois?
Roll all the dice.
House money on that one, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of look at it as you know you. Yeah, as Chris said, house money. I think you got to pull out all the tricks.
I think you keep doing what you're doing in terms of Walter's call-in, Brown's quarterback, things like that, but you don't do anything really outside of, like, you're not making gigantic personnel changes here, right? Like, you're not moving Dylan Thieneman into a corner and putting Nylon Green at safety or some crazy crap like that, right?
Marcos Davila at tight end.
Yeah, something wild like that, yeah. So, like, you know, but in terms of play calling, I don't think you're conservative. I think we see multiple fourth down goes before halftime.
Actually, what would be cool is like a trick play if you had like if because I'm assuming Card's out with the still with the concussion this week. I know he's kind of
well, Walter said we may see both quarterbacks. Please,
yeah, he's in the depth chart as an or at the top of the depth chart with Ryan Brown.
Okay. Well, I was going to say it'd be cool if they ran some kind of a like a wildcat or trick play where they had both quarterbacks in one at like running back or something. And I don't know. I'm not a coach.
That'd be awesome. But trivia question, Russ. I pulled it up on PFF. How many times was Antonio Blackman targeted against Ohio State?
Oh, man.
A lot.
I'm going to say.
All right. Okay. They threw 72 passes. So let
I'm going to say somewhere between 12 and 16.
I'm going to say 19.
Wait, 72 passes?
It might be closer to 20, 72 passes.
I said 22. That's my guess.
22. Okay.
I'm going 19.
Russ couldn't be more accurate. It was 14.
Oh, wow.
So,
he said
somewhere between 12 and 16. So that's what I was going to get. But I mean, that's a lot. Like, that's a lot. I didn't realize that. I mean, I was there. I didn't realize they threw the ball that much. But
yeah, because we feel like Nyland Green got attacked at Illinois, and it was, what, 9?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. So I mean, yeah. But yeah, I don't know what it is with Nyland Green. If he's still, you know, shaking off the injury, but it's he just seems to want to run over the receivers a little aggressively.
Well, I talked about this in the Nebraska game. It kind of ticks me off because it's gamesmanship, right? Like rules are rules. You got to call it the way it is. I get that, but like you're rewarding bad throws. Essentially, mm-hmm. right? Like 90% of the time that those penalties get called, it's because the receiver's coming back for a underthrown football. So, like, I think teams have definitely tried to do that now and make that part of the game plan of just saying, hey, the defender's not going to be able to, you know, turn and look at the ball and track the receiver. Because that's what it is. We make it sound so simple, like just turn around. Okay, yeah, well, if they turn around and try to look at the football the whole time, they're going to lose that receiver because in Division I, Power 5, Power 4 college football, you give a guy more than arm length, he's open. So you've got to stay in that dude's jock straps. You can't really take your attention off that guy. And it's not like you're going to hear somebody across the field going, turn, look for the ball. Like, well, you've got to almost – like, did you see the play – I know we're talking about NFL here, but did you see the play – I think it was Jackson Smith and Jigba for the Seahawks where Geno Smith was scrambling. And so Smith and Jigba was looking back at Geno Smith with two defenders looking at him. So he starts to go back like he's getting ready to catch a pass, right? And both defenders bite on it. One of them even tried to jump up like they were going to swat the pass that's coming in that was never coming because Geno Smith was like 10, 15 yards down the field now that, by that point. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just how you have to play defense in football. Like, it's hard to turn your head around. Like, I get that.
It is.
It is easy, but it's, you know.
Well, and something I'd love to know, maybe Vinny knows. I know he played on the other side of the ball, but – you know, when you're playing one man, right? So one man, at least that's what I call one high straight man. I think Purdue plays mostly straight man. I don't know if there's much pattern matching going on.
Or was it matchup? Didn't they mention something about like a matchup zone?
Let's just say for like the sake of simplicity that you're playing one high safety and then man, straight man, and every other secondary position. If no one's like, if you're on an island effectively and there's no one around to yell ball, like, do you know the ball's coming? That's one thing I've thought about quite a bit.
That's what I'm saying.
Do teams try to exploit that? That's something I've wondered too, because it seems to be a theme in the last few games that guys aren't turning around and trying to play the ball. And it's almost like they don't even know the ball's coming. And I just wonder if you try to create a one-on-one scenario on offense to try to exploit that. Just something I've thought about. I don't know. Hmm.
Careful, and crowd Dan. Noise and shit or stuff like
family program, Chris.
Shut your mouth. I eat Taco Bell in this program. I can cuss if I want to.
Hey, we only eat salads going forward. That's our new thing.
Speak for yourself.
So what does Purdue have to do better to beat Oregon? So let's talk about Oregon for a second. Early in the season, they looked a little vulnerable, right? Who was it they played in week one? Idaho, where they won 24-14.
No.
And I think in the fourth quarter, what was it? 17-14 at one point, and kind of the whole country was taking watch. But then, you know, they just beat Ohio State, which, you know, now Ohio State wants to fire their coach, supposedly, their fans do at least. But you know, so A, like which Oregon team is going to show up is a big question, but what does Purdue have to do to beat Oregon? What did I do? What did I say? What's so funny?
You gotta play lights out. You gotta play lights out against Oregon.
You said Idaho, and I kind of whispered and said, you know.
I think that's the only one that I missed completely.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, and you're the one just saying this is a family program.
listen, you can't. I work with third graders, okay? You get these in my maturity has just gone skyrocketing.
Yeah, so somebody was answering the question.
Take it away.
I think Damon said play lights out, but it's just, you've got to play disciplined football. You've got to not give up big plays on defense. You've got to find some big plays on offense.
Crap.
And you've got to stay in the game as long as you can.
I think Purdue needs to steal at least 7 points in the form of a pick six, in the form of recovering a fumble that gets run back to the house. I think Purdue's going to need a little help scoring wise from their defense to win this game. I mean, and this is the most skilled team that we've played.
And I don't know if this is true or not, but to me,
and Notre Dame was pretty skilled.
Sitting at home watching, I felt like, I know it wasn't Purdue's choice because Bielema deferred to the second half, but I liked Purdue coming out with the ball first. I liked getting a taste of what Brown could do and I feel like that maybe gave the team some energy. I know the first half still didn't go that great. It was 28-3 or whatever it was at half. But I like us going out on offense first. So if that's anything that we can do to try to get the ball rolling, to try to throw the kitchen sink at Oregon to really keep them on their toes and have to make them play from behind, I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing that change, Damon, where they just look to get the ball first.
Yeah. And Dylan Gabriel played well against Ohio State, but he did throw two picks against Michigan State. So he's not, you know, he's not perfect. He's susceptible to.
You mean Pat Mahomes Jr.?
Yeah. So they're a rundown of their record. They beat Idaho 24-14. They beat Boise State 37-34. Again, weeks 1 and 2, it looks a little bit vulnerable. We do have a common opponent in them, Oregon State, who they beat 49-14, unfortunately. And if you guys remember, Oregon State was, they were excited about that game. Like, they were like, hey, Oregon's looked vulnerable. We can win this game. And they got a.
Yeah, it was like 22-14 at halftime. It was a close game at halftime.
And then they just kind of took off. They played UCLA 134-13. They played Michigan State. They won 31-10. You know, and everyone was, you know, kind of saying like, hey, they've played the lower tier of the Big Ten. You know, how are they going to do against Ohio State? And then they won. Now, one could argue Ohio State kind of lost that game more than Oregon actually won it. Neither here nor there, but they had the W in the result column against Ohio State. So, I think this is going to be a tough game. I think that there's going to need to be some magic, if you will, some things that just go Purdue's way. That Purdue needs to be on the good side of the luck coin in this game. But
Frank, could you tell me how many tackles we missed against Illinois?
10.
It's not.
I mean, there's that. While obviously you want that number to be zero, right. 10 is a very good number comparatively speaking.
Yeah, because I think we compared it to like turnovers in basketball, right, where you want to be 8. So we kind of come up with an arbitrary number of 10.
Yeah, when you think of missed tackles, so I'm doing the math now. When you think of missed tackles, you want to keep it under, 15% of the ratio of your total tackles. And so how many total tackles did Purdue have? And you're making me sound really smart, Chris, because I knew the answer immediately. Didn't even have to look it up. That we had 10 missed tackles. How many total tackles?
And now 60? He's going to look up total tackles.
43. Had 43 how many, total tackles.
Ooch. How many missed tackles did Illinois have against 23%? Us?
So 23%. How many missed tackles did Illinois have?
Mm-hmm. I think for me anyway, I would like to look at like what even our opponents are doing. Because I can get so fixated on us and like where we're not.
We're always critical of our own team. Okay. We're always overly critical of our own team as human beings. Illinois had 8 missed tackles, 38 on 38 total tackles. Okay. So about the same, 22% versus 23%. So not an ideal number for either team, but You know, again, Purdue had 19 against Notre Dame. They had 18 against Oregon State. They
had 7 of those 8 missed tackles with them trying to tackle our running quarterback.
Yeah. So the ratio is about the same for both teams. We just had to, unfortunately, had to make a few more tackles. So, I don't recall a single missed tackle from Illinois, to be honest with you. Because, again, I'm overly critical of Purdue and their what they do on the field, and I watch them with a microscope. So,
Random question, Frank. Maybe you know this. Maybe somebody else could know this. So they had that play with Jamal Edgerton where he was stretching for the end zone for the touchdown, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if someone's going to tackle you as you go to the end zone and you score a touchdown, does that go down as a missed tackle, or did they tackle you just into the end zone?
I think once the ball crosses the plane, isn't the play dead?
Right, but there was a tackle attempt, right? So, like, was that a missed tackle or a successful tackle? Yet
I would guess to say that in order for a tackle to be missed, and I'm just speculating here, in order for a tackle to be missed, the play has to a tackle has to be attempted and the ball still be in play, and then the ball be in play after the player is no longer making contact with the ball handler. What is that, Chris? Am I a robot?
My head hurts.
No, I'm dazing off because my brain's broken.
Yeah,
that's you're using big words I can't figure out.
I tend to think that would be the case too.
Numbers confuse me.
Numbers in the test.
Yeah, but like because you're in the process of making a tackle, and then the ball crosses the plane, beautiful. The play's dead at that point. So the tackle just doesn't get locked. I would think, but I don't know. I'm not the scorekeeper.
What was our question last year or year
I
before?
I don't know. It was...
when I said balls last year, talking about Zach Edey's balls.
Well, no. One time, Damon said, and Edey's really good at grabbing the balls and bringing them down.
I almost threw up.
First of all, I said he's good at grabbing the balls and keeping them up here. All right, he's not bringing them down here. That was the issue. Yeah. But so if you're gonna quote, no.
I was laughing so hard at that.
Chris, it's good to be back on the same show with you again.
I know. Yeah.
Since we're talking about Zach Edey, why don't we do a quick little pause for our sponsors?
Oh, Frank, you beat me to it.
Yeah. Quick little pause, girl. Talk about our sponsors and then we'll flip switches and start talking about some of the things we've seen flip from switches. Current and former players and get into basketball a little bit. So we'll see you guys in about 90 seconds.
Tell me, do you like to be fashionable? Do you like to look handsome or beautiful? Do you like being the best dressed Purdue fan you know? Well, guess what? We got just the place for you. It's called martinvintage.com. And if you go there, you will find the best in Purdue throwback designs on the market. I'm telling you, if you want it, they got it. Basketball, football, Purdue Pete logos, anything and everything. And if you go to martinvintage.com and use code BXB at checkout, they'll throw you 10% off your order. Now, that's a great deal if you ask me. Tell them that we sent you, and they'll say, hey, you have a slightly above average taste in podcasts. Here's 10% because they're friends of the program and we can't thank them enough. Again, martinvintage.com. Use code BXP at checkout for 10% off. Boiler up.
Attention all college basketball enthusiasts. Are you tired of just watching the game and ready to dive deeper into the stats and strategies that make college basketball so thrilling? Introducing CBBAnalytics.com, your ultimate destination for college basketball analytics. With CBBAnalytics.com, you'll have access to the stats and insights that you need to take your love for the game to the next level. From shooting percentages to player efficiency ratings, CBBAnalytics.com has it all. Get detailed player profiles, in-depth team analysis, player and team shot charts, and even in-game trends available all at your fingertips. Do you want to know how well Purdue shoots above the break threes with 10 or fewer seconds left on the shot clock? CBB Analytics has you covered. You want to see how different lineups perform in different situations? CBBAnalytics.com has you covered. You can get a free tier subscription, which allows you to see stats for just one team. But if you truly want to elevate your game knowledge, be sure to check out the Pro Tier subscription, which allows access to all 362 Division I teams. One of our favorite features is the in-game streaming system, which displays real-time stats, analytics, and even shot charts during live games. If you're ready to expand your basketball knowledge, check out CBBAnalytics.com today. I think we just need that music in the background all the time.
I love it. It's the
Chris
best
passed time. Out. It made him fall asleep. Oh, there he is.
Oh. Yeah. Basketball, man.
Try to use that as my bathroom break.
Round ball.
Round, yeah. Let's talk about a round ball for a few. Zach Edey, man. Zach Edey's been playing well.
Cook is not on the team anymore, Frank. Okay.
The basketball.
He graduated.
I'm aware he graduated. Yeah, he plays for the Memphis Grizzlies.
Did he graduate? I'm just kidding.
But how do you guys think he's I think he's looked awesome. I think he's looked
he's doing everything really. Everybody said he couldn't.
Yeah, he's stepping out and he's defending on the perimeter. I mean, he blocked Zach LaVine several times the other night, which is pretty impressive. I mean, in terms of athleticism for basketball players, it's hard to get more athletic and explosive than Zach LaVine.
Right.
And to be able to guard him and just, I mean, Zach LaVine didn't even take him seriously. He wasn't even looking at him. And yeah, he just thought he had an easy layup and smacked the ball right out of his hands.
On Twitter that I saw was basically everything he did in college is translating to the NBA. Mm-hmm. That's all they were saying was his game's not going to translate. And it literally looks exactly the same. Like literally everything is translating.
Yeah, even his post shot celebrations. So he dunked on Isaiah Jackson, which you know, his favorite letter
in the alphabet.
And I'll be honest, I don't know what this means. For those of you who are listening, I'm kind of waving my hand above my head. But yeah, like the commentary, we're like, oh, he's showing a little shade, and I'm like, I don't know what that means. But he short, did this.
Dylan, need you to pay attention. What does it mean?
Yeah, Dylan, you work with the kids. What's this mean? Zach Edey did it.
When you hold it down, like short, when you're going like this, I mean, it's like a head.
It means like you're on your head, like I caught on your head. But like, I've learned a few things. So the too short, like when my kids do it at recess, it always makes me laugh because they're all short. Yeah, there's this one, which means like caught it on your head. What's the other one? There's a few others. Yeah, too short, on your head. And then the other day I was like, oh, you mossed him. And they're like, what does that mean? Good. Great. Perfect. I'm old. All right.
This is good.
Was very proud. There's basketball goals in all the rooms at church, like the third, fourth, fifth grade rooms. And my wife and I help every now and then in there. And there was third graders shooting. They were like a couple of last kids waiting to get picked up. And so I was like kind of shooting baskets with them. And I like a small tear formed on my cheek when one of them tried to make a shot around me and yelled Kobe. And I was like, yes, there's hope for the future generation.
I mean, that's what playing video games, you yell when you toss a grenade, right?
Oh, I thought it was John Wilkes Booth.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. End the program here. Yeah. No. So Zach Edey, is it safe to say that he is starting to, I'm not saying prove the doubters wrong, but raise some questions in their minds, let's say. And it, to me, it seems like the college basketball world, or just the basketball world, has switched from hating Zach Edey to rooting for Zach Edey now.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody who ran their mouth last year when they had to play him is now like, let's do well. But
yeah. I didn't quite catch what you said there, but yes, that's exactly. Yeah, that's right. They're spouting nonsense for sure.
As am I, apparently. This is a disaster.
No, I think it was last night. He had 23 points in only 18 minutes. He actually came off the bench, and that had to do with Memphis not really starting any of their starters. But, I mean, he backed down Miles Turner several times. He did the whole, you know, fire off your gun like it's a pistol after he dunked on Miles Turner several times.
Fire off your gun like it's a pistol?
Finger pistol, you know, just like just like he would do, you know, after he.
It's like a penalty.
Russ is about to take Frank to gun safety class after this.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Yeah, he pulled out his finger and pretended it was a gun, which he often did for Purdue. But
What is going on with this show now? Yeah. It is off the rails.
Yeah, we're going off the rails.
But okay, so to not be completely like gushing over Zach Edey, is there any part of anybody that is thinking, oh well, like this is preseason, the guys he's going up against may not be like, I mean, it's just like in the NFL, like preseason, they're not trying that hard. I mean, unless you're like, I'm on the bench and like I'm on a 10-day contract here and I have to like show out, you know, are his opponents right now really putting forth like in-game real effort against him? So are these skewed or like, because I want Zach to be as successfully as he is right now in the preseason. I hope he is, and I hope that we can rub it in everybody's face. But is there any part of anybody that thinks that it may be just because of like it's the preseason, his opponents just may not be trying as hard?
From what I've seen, you know, like Miles Turner is a starting center for the Pacers, you know, and he was scoring on him. So, and he did what his last game was, or 2 games ago, was 23 points in 19 minutes. So obviously he's playing less than half the game. And I think he's playing mostly when it's ones v ones. Just like in preseason football, you're only going to see a drive or two or a quarter or two, whatever, of the starters. I think that's similar to what's happening. So it might not translate perfectly, because you might have a guy that if he's questionable or he's injured, he's definitely not going to play in the preseason. But for the most part, he is playing against other ones. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I don't know how much you all saw, you know, the highlights or anything of him in the game against Chicago, but I felt like Vucevic did give him some problems. Now I feel like that guy's going to give most people problems because he's 7 foot tall and like 300 plus pounds. But that's what the announcers were saying. We're like, in college, he went against small guys and now he has to play against big guys, so he won't play as well. And I'm like,
easy, bud.
Yeah,
I will say one thing I've really liked watching, because I've seen some of Zach's highlights. I feel like he's gotten better at those like the hook shots, but like farther away from, like still in the paint, but like farther away from the rim. I feel like he used to have to be pretty close to the half circle to hit those consistently. And it seems like in the few preseason games I've seen, he's been almost like to the free throw line shooting those and hitting them pretty consistently. So that's been a cool development.
He has increased his range. I will agree with that. Yeah.
And I definitely want to say, if anybody says, oh, he's played big guys and he's going to have an issue or whatever, like Donovan Clingan still has nightmares of Zach Edey.
Yeah, but I thought nobody in the NBA played big guys anymore. Also, I thought that was extinct. You know,
that's something that only exists among people who don't watch NBA, Russ. I've truly come to believe that people who don't watch NBA have the strongest opinions about NBA. It's like, well, if you want to be a center in the NBA, you got to be able to step out and shoot threes. There's only like 10 centers in the NBA who step out and shoot threes. I mean, it's not like
32 teams.
Yeah.
That's less than a third.
Yeah.
Math. Look at you.
We're also a math podcast here.
No, the hell we're not.
Yeah, speak for yourself.
Yeah. Got me twisted.
Speaking of a third, that reminds me of Scott Steiner's famous promo back in TNA. Surprised you guys still let me talk about this, where he said he had a 33 1/3% chance. You guys have to look it up. Scott Steiner math promo. Watch it. It's hilarious. Anyway, continue on, guys.
Yeah, Jaden Ivey. Let's talk about Jaden Ivey.
Damon, if we were all in a ring really wrestling good for a title, what would your percentage chance be based off of the number of people in the podcast?
Why is this happening?
20%. There we go. So, Jaden Ivey.
Jaden Ivey's played well. Yeah, I mean, you look at his scoring distribution. First game, 22 points. Second game, 16. Third game, 16. Fourth game, 19. He's played well. He's played really well. I think he shot something like 50% from three in the preseason so far, which, again, is preseason. But, I mean, that's been kind of the big knock on him, you know, in his first two seasons in the NBA, is his inability to consistently shoot threes. Like, you know, he'll go 2 for 10 in one game and then he'll go 2 for 10, like 2 or 3 games in a row. And then, you know, he'll go like 5 for 8 in a game, but his 3-point shooting is not consistent. But yeah, he's been over 50% so far in preseason. He's taken, in all the games, 3, 4, 5, and 5 are the number of threes he's taken in each game. So it's not like small volume. Obviously, you know, no one's going to finish a season or continue to shoot at that clip, but he looks a lot more comfortable. He looks a lot more fluid. His decision-making's better. He's looking to score a little bit more. I feel like in the first two seasons, he was looking to pass a lot and try to create for others, but it looks like he's kind of hunting his own shot and really trying to create mismatches and get to the rim. But I feel like that's, if there's any player in the NBA, which, you know, Purdue only has two, but I feel like he's the one who I want to see to have a lot of success, because we know we can recruit good big men, and we've recruited good guards. But to be able to say, like, hey, we put Jaden Ivey in the NBA, and what he's done is a huge tool for recruiting. So I really want to see him do well for that.
Yeah. All right, boys. Unfortunately, I have to take off on that note.
What a nerd.
That's work. 5 a.m. work.
It's like you have a career or something. Jeez.
I show up. I kind of just get yelled at.
You protect people for a living. God, I just selfish.
Get yelled at.
Mark.
Yeah. Nerd. But you guys have a good night.
Thank you for your service. We love
you. See you, man.
I love you.
AP rankings came out. What it was
14th or 16th?
14th.
14th.
14th. Yeah. 14th.
How do you guys think about that? Do you guys think it's accurate, high, low? What do you think?
And I use, like, what, 16, 17?
I think they were, yeah, 16th or 17th, yeah.
I think it was a little too low. Like, I don't think it was a robbery, but I think they should be at least top 10.
Here's where I'm at with it, right? The Big Ten is one of, if not the best, basketball conferences, right? Right? We would agree with that?
I mean, I think the entire Big Ten is top 75 in KenPom.
Yeah, so the fact that there are two other conferences, one with four teams, one with five teams, ahead of the best team in the Big Ten in the rankings, to me just doesn't sit quite right. Especially when there's teams that we've beat within the last year. And I get that rosters are completely different, but it's, what, 2 years in a row we beat Gonzaga now, right? Mm-hmm. We beat them three times in 2 years, actually, technically.
Yep.
So mm-hmm. I just
played them twice last year.
You know, I don't, if as by itself, I don't disagree with 14th. I think we should have been closer to the edge of the top 10, to be honest. But you lose the two-time National Player of the Year, I get that. But then you start to look at the teams ranked ahead of us, and you're just like, you know, okay, well, we've, you know, we kind of own Bama, right? We beat them twice in the last 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Gonzaga.
Yeah, I can't wait for that game in Mackey.
We've beaten Arizona recently. We've beaten Tennessee recently, obviously. We get Texas A&M this year. So that'll be, you know, hopefully that'll be a top 15, maybe even top 10 matchup when we play them this season. But I feel like we've earned a little more respect. And this is where I go back to when people talk about, you know, when Painter does well or Purdue does well, people try to sell us short and go, oh, well, it's Painter. People always expect him to do blah, blah. Well, and then it's like, okay, well, look at this. Like, right, people are so quick to kick us right out to 14, 15, whatever. They're not a Final Four contender anymore because they lost Edie. Well, what happened in our Elite Eight year, right? That going into the Elite Eight year, we had lost the four seniors, right? You know, Dakota and Vince and, you know, Haas and PJ. And it was like, oh, now what's the team going to look like? Who knows what's going to happen? They're not going to do it. And then it ended up being better. I'm not necessarily saying this team's going to be better because obviously we made the national championship game, but I am saying, like, don't sleep on us. And to me, this is kind of borderline sleeping on us.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I'm not so much too miffed about our rankings or anything. I do think it's crazy that Braden Smith gets so much disrespect, as in, like, he's second. I think he's second team All-American in the rankings. And then I've been seeing a lot of stuff talking about like first team preseason Big Tens and it just talking about, like, the best point guards in the country. And, like, you have to scroll to find Braden Smith on those lists. But then guys like Dylan Harper, who, yeah, he's a top prospect coming out of high school, but he hasn't played a single minute of college basketball yet. I just think it's unfair
because all the lists that I'm seeing him on are, like, you know, breakout players. And I'm like, he hasn't even set foot in a college basketball game yet. And, like, to me, it just seems unfair to, like, A, put that much pressure on him, but B, it just, like, we haven't even seen him play yet. You know, yeah, it blows my mind. Yeah, I've seen his name on so many lists and he's popping up everywhere. I'm sure he's going to be a great player. I don't mean any disrespect to him. But, man, like, Braden Smith has he's played a lot of minutes. played a whole lot of minutes of college basketball. So to leave him out is a bit. But then, you know, he's preseason player of the year as voted by coaches in the Big Ten. So those who are close to him, those who have to play against him, those who have to match up against him, they voted him preseason player of the year. So I think it's that, you know, on the periphery where teams maybe in the Big 12 or people who are Big 12 oriented or SEC oriented, you know, they haven't heard about him as much because obviously the media attention in the recent years has been dominated by Zach. So they'll find out. I'm very confident they'll find out. But
we need to make a list of top point guards in the country who also own a Cybertruck. He'd be top of the list. That one, I tell you what.
Yeah, I love all the let's say elderly individuals who are criticizing him for having a Cybertruck. Yeah, my favorite comment that I saw was a college student should have a beat up Chevy, not a Cybertruck, which I thought was an interesting take there.
How dare they have nice things? Which would I call a Cybertruck a nice thing necessarily? No. It is, but it's uglier than sin.
Dude, I love that one that you sent that had the Dale Earnhardt decal on it. I thought that was sick.
There's a kid, and I don't know who he is, drives around my hometown here, and it's a Ford Focus, and he's a Dale Earnhardt 3 on each side. And I said, little buddy, that's a sin, okay? You can't put a Dale Earnhardt 3 on a Ford. That's not how this works. I get so mad every time.
So you're the NBA guy, Frank. Who's the last freshman that was an All-American, preseason All-American in college basketball? First team.
Wait. Okay, you said you're an NBA
guy. You're talking about over-heralded freshmen that haven't even played a minute of college basketball in somewhat recently. It might have been before.
Romeo Langford.
What's that?
Is it Romeo Langford?
Negative.
Ben Simmons.
Negative.
I mean, so you said you prefaced that with you're an NBA guy. It has to be an NBA guy who's in the NBA, right? Like who's
he was. I don't know if he still is or not. He was a he didn't necessarily live up to the hype, but he's Mark got Hill a ring. Foltz.
He's got a ring,
and he played for a blue blood. I'll give you that hint too.
Oh, okay, Brandon Ingram.
Close.
No, he doesn't
guy
have a ring.
From Kansas that was there for 15 years.
Perry Ellis. No, it wasn't Perry Ellis. Yeah. No, I don't know. Who is it, Russ?
Darko Milicic.
Harrison Barnes.
That was close.
Okay.
And he actually was a preseason All-American with Juwan Johnson.
Yeah, that's interesting. And he, he's been a good role player in the NBA. I forgot they won a championship. Yeah. So interestingly, Purdue is 10th in KenPom. IU is 39th, and not that, you know, I'm studying IU, but they're two spots apart in the AP rankings, yet 29 spots apart separates them in KenPom. Don't know how much you guys looked at KenPom. Houston is number one, which I feel like is a perennial thing at this point. They're always going to be number one.
And I'd be interested to see how he does this formula when there's teams with 11 transfers on them. Like, how do you give a team with 11 transfer players a KenPom rating in the preseason?
Yeah, he kind of keeps it under wraps, but he says he does some things about, you know, how those players played and a lot of it is data from the previous seasons. I have a fairly decent idea of how KenPom works. I've been able to replicate it myself, and I won't really start taking the rankings seriously until probably December, probably maybe mid-December, to be honest, when we have enough of a sample size. But, you know, Houston, historically, they've been known for playing like a really easy non-con. Looking at their schedule, they have Auburn, they have Alabama in non-con, they have Rutgers, Notre Dame. So, I mean, they're not playing the typical cakewalk of a schedule that they normally do. So they're going to be tested early. He doesn't have any non-con rankings yet, but Purdue, I mean, just a reminder, we've got Alabama at home, which KenPom predicts a 1-point win. That's the fourth game of the season. Oh yeah. If there's one game to go to all of our listeners, that's the one. And then Purdue plays at Marquette. How many times have we played Marquette in the last 10 years? Like it has to come down to like at least a lot, but we play.
They're always pretty close games.
Always really good games. Play NC State again. Texas A&M Indy Classic. They're 16th in KenPom. KenPom predicts a 3-point win. Auburn. We play Auburn on a neutral court. I mean, so Purdue's non-con is not a cakewalk by any means. So I'm excited for a really good season. I think we're all a little.
It's not just not a cakewalk. It's the toughest non-con in the Big Ten, I believe.
Is it?
I believe so. The last graphic I saw on Twitter.
And I think KenPom has Purdue winning the Big Ten by 3 games as well. I think I read that somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's so crazy.
He has Purdue projected 21-9 total. He does have Purdue winning the Big Ten by 3 games. Yep.
Over at 21-9. So what are we going to lose all our non-con games? That's crazy.
14-6 in conference. Is what he has. So the losses predicted are Marquette and Auburn, and then there are several that are
crazy. When was the last time a team's won the Big Ten and only had 21 overall wins and won it by 3 games? Like, that's insane to me.
When was the last time a team has only had 21?
Going down the rabbit hole right now.
yeah, I won't do that, but I mean, this is the, like I said, all the Big Ten teams are KenPom top 75, and you know, KenPom top 100 are your elite teams. So we're talking super, super elite to have every team in the top 75. So who was the worst Big Ten team last year in the Big Ten, and what were they ranked?
Indiana.
Michigan. Oh, Michigan was ranked 128th, and they were 8-24. So, I mean, Rutgers was ranked 100th last season. And, you know, they had some upsets.
Is Howard still at Michigan?
No, he's gone. They hired Dusty May, right?
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah. I couldn't remember.
They did bring in Dusty May. Yeah. So, brand new Michigan team. No idea what to expect in terms of scheme. I mean, we bring in 4 new teams into the conference. But, you know, football hasn't gone like I think anyone thought it would. So I think we're ready for a little bit of a refresher. But do you guys think this puts a little bit more pressure on the basketball team?
Oh yeah.
I don't think there's any more or less. I think that you know, people are still going to start talking if we lose a game. As soon as we lose a game in basketball, oh, here we go. We went off Zach Edey, regardless of how football went. I think people will be just as critical.
Yeah, Braden Smith is going to have a game with 5 assists instead of like 12, and people will be like, yep.
Nick and Frank are going to hit their overrating on the PRA bets for.
I don't know. I'm not sure what you're talking about, but you know, the second game is against Northern Kentucky, who's ranked 157th in KenPom, so not a cakewalk by any means. I mean, it's Yale. I mean, yeah, the Ivy League is always good for a few upsets every season too. So, I mean, KenPom predicts a 14-point win over Yale. So we'll have to see how that goes, but I'm excited. I'm excited that we have KenPom rankings. What is it? Is it less than 2 weeks till the scrimmage? The exhibition game against Creighton?
I believe so. I believe you're correct.
Yeah.
I know it's less than 3 weeks till regular season basketball. So,
crazy.
Yeah. Well, unless there's anything else you guys want to go ahead and wrap this one up, or just
real quick, I want to do a hockey recap.
Yes, let's do that.
So the boys went out to Oakland in Michigan, not California, which I learned through that. Interesting. Anyway, lost both games of the series, the weekend series. They come back this upcoming weekend against Miami. It's at home on 10-18 and 10-19. Miami's got a pretty good squad over there, so hopefully the boys can get a bounce back few games, and then after that they're at Butler, well, a home and away with Butler. So they're looking good. You know, they're starting off a little rough, but you know, they're going to knock off some rust. They got a lot of new kids on the team this year. I got to watch the Indiana State game with Coach Matt, aka Coach Butte. Got a little sneak peek of, so they're playing an outdoor game this year, and I can't remember which game that is on the schedule as I look at it, but they'll be playing an outdoor game, and Coach Butte shared with me the jerseys they'll be wearing for that game. And holy smokes, they are so sick. And I'm going to buy four of them. And it's going to be awesome. So keep an eye on Purdue Hockey socials, Boiler Hockey across the board. They're very active on Instagram and Twitter. So give them a follow. They deserve our support. You know, I've sung the praises on the show a lot, but, you know, these guys do all the funding themselves. So not only are they working in the gym on the ice, but they're working to keep the program alive, and they're doing a hell of a job. Bunch of good kids. Excited to I'll be with them when they come to Oxford, which is, as I look at their schedule, January 24th through the 26th. Really excited for that one, hoping we can get a good crowd of Boilers there. You know, Oxford's not too far of a trek from West Lala. So maybe we can get some of you guys out here and we can have some fun with the guys. They're a good time. Coach Matt and Coach, all the other coaches are good dudes and the kids are great. And they got a really good thing going. They're building a plan to, you know, start the conversation of building a hockey-specific building. I don't want to say an arena, but a hockey-specific area for the boys, because like I've said in previous shows, they drive an hour just to practice, let alone play games. So hopefully that can come to fruition in the next, you know, however long it takes, few years. So these guys are brilliant. Not only, you know, are they good hockey players, they're really good students, and they're really well-rounded gentlemen, if I would say so myself. So like I always preach it, support the hockey team. They have six sweaters. These things are the best, and they have even more better uniforms coming up for their outdoor game this year.
They got more better uniforms.
More better uniforms.
More better. It's more gooder. Come on.
More gooder. Yeah, you're
more
right.
Better.
We all know I'm great at words. I do words really good.
Words good.
So yeah, they're coming up this weekend against Miami at home, 10-18, 10-19. I believe they're streamed on YouTube. So if you want to catch them on YouTube, you can catch them there. Just make sure to follow them on you know, socials, Boiler Hockey across the board. It's well worth your while. So go Boiler Hockey.
Awesome. All right. Well, we've got a game coming up this Friday against the Oregon Ducks, number two team in the country, coming in to play at Purdue in a night game on October 18th.
History tells me.
Purdue's had some luck with that previously, so we'll hope for some luck there. It is the Hammer Down Cancer game, which is a big thing here up in West Lafayette. So hopefully, if you're going to the game, hopefully it's great weather. We get to see Ryan Brown's home debut, and we'll be back next week to talk about Purdue football, hopefully with a crazy awesome upset. And we'll be back to talk about the game and everything else. And then we'll see you guys next week. And Boiler up, hammer down.